Chapter 25, The Burning Snow. Their hotel appeared ordinary enough, but the rooms they were allowed to use were based on their government ranking. It struck Rick as similar to several generations past in the U.S. when ether tears had been used for everything. Now they only governed a few services and applications, whereas in Siberia they ruled every interaction. Weaker people were even supposed to step aside in hallways or on the street. He'd barely had time to set down his things and wash his face when H barged in. Rick thought he had locked the door and frowned, but H only shook his head. Local laws don't apply to us, but they do assume that masters have complete control over their trainees. How comforting. If you don't fail me here, I won't use it. H gestured for him to follow. The transfer to the demon realm was arranged more quickly than I expected. Apparently you have someone requesting you on the other side, so we need to do this now. So that was it. Rick had hoped to have at least a day to unwind in the hotel and go through all his training exercises again, maybe even do some final research. He grabbed a can of Lisa's serum and his demonic needle, then followed H out the door. As they walked down the hallway, he decided there was no point asking questions and just drank the serum so he'd be ready for the demon realm. They entered a special elevator just past the normal one, requiring both of them to scan their badges before it would close the doors and activate the controls. This time, however, they headed up instead of down. Rick had always thought of the demon realm as being down, but he supposed that wasn't actually correct. There's not a lot I can say to help. As they neared the top, H glanced over at him flatly. Don't fail. Though Rick wanted to snark back, he didn't have it in him. This visit to the demon realm might be more dangerous than his past two, plus more was on the line, both for the demon brothers and for himself. Even if he succeeded there, he would only be thrown against... No, focus. By the time the elevator stopped, Rick was mostly calm. For the first time, he would be entering the demon realm fully prepared for the transition. That didn't prepare him to step out on top of the roof and see a hole tear itself out of the sky. Biting shards of ice hit his skin as the wind began to swirl just above the hotel roof. He distantly saw that there was a heavily reinforced fence and several other security measures that set up the portal, but it was hard to focus on them with that entrance to the demon realm yawning above him. Only after he'd stepped forward did he realize that H had stayed back cautiously. Do I jump or... Rick didn't get out the next word before he felt the portal begin to draw him upward. There was a brief moment when he could have resisted, but he instead braced himself and let the force take him. In a flash, he seared through the frozen air and then plunged into something that felt even colder. Rick rocketed out of a pool of water into a pale sky. The air felt colder than before, and at first he worried that he'd freeze solid, but then he realized that he wasn't even slightly wet. For a moment, he hung in the air at the top of his arc, with a view of the desolate landscape all around him. There was nothing but black tundra and a series of pale blue ponds. His path down was slower, drifting more like he was used to in the demon realm. When he looked back, he saw only the faintest ripples from the pond behind him. When he gazed into the water, instead of his reflection, he saw a blurry glimpse of the hotel roof. So, that was his passage back. It didn't look like H was there anymore. Rick knew that probably didn't mean anything, so he just turned away to get to work. Though he instinctively tried to rub his arms against his torso for warmth, it did nothing against the supernatural chill. He'd set up his shielding aura without thinking, but it didn't seem like a single demon was visible. Hiding? Or was this region actually abandoned? When no one arrived after several minutes, Rick bent down and leapt as high as he could. With the strange, drifting physics of the demon realm, he sailed far higher than he could have in real life. For long moments, he was suspended over the landscape, his breath momentarily gone as he realized that it was as beautiful as it was harsh. Each of the pools reflected a different scene, glimmering like possibilities from so high above. The black snow reflected the light sky in shimmering waves as he moved, and in the distance he could see trees crystalline with ice. Aside from the beauty, Rick saw several large fires that might have activity around them. One northwest, two to the south, and one to the east. When he returned to the ground, landing more softly than his jump would have suggested, he decided that there was nothing to do but head toward one. As he left the region filled with lakes, he began to see more signs of life. Several of the smallest, mindless demons moved cautiously through the snow, and then he saw a larger demon chewing on a smaller one. The demons and Branton had all swarmed together, but here he realized that he was seeing predator and prey relationships. Something began rushing toward him, and he considered just how far the prey category might extend. Even though he should have been untouchable here, Rick dodged on instinct, his hands going up by his head in a defensive position. Whatever it was fast, sweeping just past him before tracing a quick arc back to him. Only when it finally reared up to its full height did he get a good look at it. Though humanoid, it was skeletally thin and clad only in black rags. It grinned with a mouth filled with sharp teeth and raised a clawed hand.
"Hello, human."
"I don't suppose you're here to welcome me?" Rick kept his hands up, even when the demon laughed at him.
"You're a showdown contestant with no demonic affiliation, are you? Well, nothing that means anything. Bold of you to come here, and a bit stupid."
With no more warning than that, it lunged forward, its claw wrapping around his throat. To Rick's shock, it actually hurt, grasping hold of him instead of passing through. The demon must be monstrously powerful, and Rick panicked for a moment. But only a moment. He might not know the demon realm perfectly, but he knew it was a world of aura. Attempting to push away the arm gripping his neck didn't work, but it didn't seem like it could crush his throat. Ignoring the mild pain, Rick focused on his aura and began to intensify it. At first, it seemed to have no effect, but then he felt the dark blood kettle rising within him, and his aura burned brighter. The demon winced and pulled back its hand. Rick prepared to take it down if he could, but it only chuckled.
"Well, it was worth a try. You must have more experience here than I thought."
"Did you just try to kill me?" Rick lowered his arms to a normal position, but he focused on his aura, ready to use it as a bludgeon if necessary. The demon only laughed again.
"I wouldn't have been able to kill you, not here, but I could have done enough to coerce you into an agreement in my favor."
Though still skeptical that he was being lured into letting his guard down, Rick thought the demon actually seemed sincere. "That couldn't possibly be legally valid. Even if it's legal in Siberia, it wouldn't be when I left."
"Oh, I didn't mean a formal bond, an embedded fusion."
The demon folded its arms and regarded him curiously, one claw tapping along its arm.
"What are you doing here, then? Don't give me that look, I'm just curious now. Maybe I can help you out as an apology."
"I'm here to meet a pair of foreign demons." Rick decided to say nothing else in case it was still a trick. Even if this demon couldn't hurt him, it could almost certainly kill Buftgage and Yithsel. To his surprise, the demon shook its head.
"Business dealings aren't this way. If they're here, they're at the bonfire to the east."
With that, the demon sprinted away, rags vanishing into the darkness. Rick stared after it, thinking about possible scams, but eventually decided that going east had to be at least as good as a random direction. As he went, he found himself pushing off the ground as hard as he could. It was easier not to think about it, but he was getting worried for the demon brothers. Comparing their home to this part of the demon realm, it was obvious that they would be in trouble. He wanted to believe they wouldn't have asked him to send them to Siberia without knowing what they were doing, but it was easy to imagine worst-case scenarios. The closer he came to the bonfire, the larger he realized it was. There was something like civilization around it, with several buildings and multiple demons moving without attacking one another. He thought a few of the buildings were several stories tall, but they looked like huddling shacks surrounding the enormous fire that burned without any visible fuel. Once he looked closer, he saw that the buildings were in an archaic style, all wooden shingles and gnarled beams. His arrival attracted a little attention, as many of the demons around the fire were strong enough to notice him. Most didn't seem interested, however, simply going about their business or training. No other humans in sight, bonded or free. When Rick finally saw a demon wearing modern combat robes, he decided to stop. "I was told to meet a pair of demons here?" He let his statement turn up like a question, unsure if it was rude to throw something like that at a stranger. The demon stared at him in surprise, then let out a sigh.
"Oh, you must be the one they're waiting for. Horrible little busybodies. Please get them away from us."
The demon left him quickly, but not before directing him to a building around the side of the central flame. As Rick floated around the side, he began to wonder if he was getting a runaround. He thought the skeletal demon from earlier had truly tried to harm him, so he was reasonably confident that he could defend himself against a direct threat. But in the demon realm, even this demon realm, that was really not his biggest fear. Then he saw two melted frogs, and they were one of the most beautiful sights of his life.
"Rook? Rook!"
All three of Yisil's eyes went wide, and he launched himself off the top of the house where the two brothers were sitting. Though Rick raised his arms to catch him, the demon went straight through his body. Buffgage climbed down at a more steady pace, but soon enough the brothers were hopping around his legs.
"I'm glad the two of you are all right."
Rick crouched down so he wasn't towering over them, smiling more broadly than he had expected. "This place is more dangerous than I thought."
"We had a formal merchant's pass, so we weren't in danger,"
Yithsel declared. But over his head, Rick saw Buffgage vomit some nervous blue mucus.
"This place was more than we expected. Even the pass might not have been enough. But they're not all as cruel as they might seem, and so we've made progress."
"What kind of progress?" Rick asked. "I was watching my bond for you two, and I noticed that it hasn't changed, but I wasn't sure what to expect." Yithsel tried to push Rick's legs to make him walk, which was, of course, ineffectual, but Rick joined the two as they half-hopped, half-rolled away from the bonfire. That took them further from prying ears, perhaps, though Rick wasn't eager to leave the flame. Being near it was one of the only things that reduced the freezing spirit of the place.
"We realize that we've been going about this wrong," Buffgage explained. "We've been trying to create powerful demonic bonds for fighters because you're a fighter, and that's what we know. But we could do better with simple economic bonds. We even have connections to resources in Branton that could make them better."
"Right, right!"
Yithsel encouragingly blew red spittle over his brother.
"I didn't realize humans could have so much lucrum. Even with help, we can probably only give bonds worth about 1,000, but there are lots of humans who just want little bonds to buy things."
"The really difficult part will be getting the necessary permits. We have a stronger basis now, but doing the same thing back in Branton will be hard because the big firms control everything."
Rick listened to the two brothers with a smile on his face, glad that they'd made progress, and even more glad that he hadn't made a horrible mistake bringing them there. But as they got further and further away from the settlement, he couldn't help but wonder exactly where they were going. He wanted to ask, but the two kept talking over each other.
"And we couldn't have done it without Cat. Yithsel, shh. She wanted to introduce herself."
The exchange instantly froze Rick's good mood.
"Who are you talking about?"
"A demon who helped us, and she wants to help you, too."
Yithsel looked up at him with a broad grin, but Rick's skepticism immediately went into overdrive. He looked toward Buffgage, who began hopping faster as he spoke.
"We're almost there anyway. I think this will solve your problem, Rick. You can get a real demonic bond, not just the best we can do."
Ahead of them, Rick saw wasteland and a pool of water. But unlike the others, which reflected the human realm, this one glowed a pale blue that was almost white. As they drew closer, he realized that the pool was frozen over, unlike all the others. The snow around them was black, so he wasn't sure why the ice was so pale, but it stood out in a way that made all his senses scream for caution. It was true that he needed a demonic bond, and he doubted that H would be satisfied with a simple bond from the brothers. Meeting someone who they trusted was, in theory, exactly what he needed. That didn't make him less nervous about meeting a demon who, by implication, seemed much more worldly than the two. He trusted their basic good nature, not their infallible judgment. The ice cracked loudly, and a burst of water erupted from it, yet the liquid froze in midair, rapidly taking the form of a woman. She had white hair, unnaturally pale skin, and a predatory smile.
Richard Hunter, I've been looking forward to meeting with you.
Chapter 26. Katenka. That's an interesting way to start a conversation. Rick didn't take a step back, but he readied his aura as he analyzed the demon woman, trying to figure out if she was a succubus or whatever the local equivalent was. Though her face was attractive, it was a slightly unnatural beauty that left him unsettled. Her robes conformed to her body, but no more than normal. Above all, the look in her eyes was far from seductive.
"Oh, but your friends have told me so much about you."
She slid across the ice without taking a step, bending low and patting the two frogs on their heads. Yithsel happily vomited mucus onto her hand, which slid off without a trace, while Buffgage looked to Rick seriously.
"We would have been in trouble without her, Rick. She's been so helpful in changing the type of our bonds. Right now she's looking for a strong human. Maybe the two of you can help each other."
"Maybe," Rick said. He hadn't intended to agree, but he didn't want to disappoint the eager looks on Buffgage and Yissel's faces. That agreement didn't commit him to anything, so he just resolved to be completely logical when it came time to sign anything. "You have the advantage over me."
"My name is Katenka."
The demoness rose and took a grand bow.
"Humans call me Rusalka."
"I don't know what that is."
"You could think of it as a Slavic mermaid, though less singing songs about the surface world and more pulling men to their doom."
Katenka smiled, her perfect white teeth just a little too pointed. This time it looked more playful than predatory, or at least a mischievous predation.
"But given that you have more experience in the demon realm than most, I would trust you to understand that we aren't actually the same as the stories told about us."
Rick didn't let his guard down, but had to nod at that. "Yeah, I've met a few demons named Lilith, for example." Katenka laughed briefly, a sound like ice shattering.
"Ah, yes, they would do that in the West. But I do not intend to play such games with you, Richard Hunter. I truly believe that we could help each other if you are willing to consider the possibility."
"I'm listening, but I've seen what demonic bonds have done to my family and friends. Taking a small one from friends is one thing, but relying on them is entirely different." Yithsel interrupted with a gobbet of purple phlegm.
"You wouldn't be like that, Rick. You know how to use a bond properly."
Seeing their enthusiasm, Rick hesitated. Before he could figure out what to say, he caught Katenka's eyes shifting between them, and he realized that her irises were luminous white. She again turned to the two frogs, smiling broadly at them.
"Richard and I need to discuss some boring contractual details. Why don't you prepare a contract for him to sign? That is, I assume that you've told him about your plans to shift into purely economic bonds. You could do much better for him that way, even right now, but you need to set up the contract properly."
The brothers agreed and began to focus more on each other. Once their attention turned away, Katenka reached out and hooked Rick's shirt with one finger. Then suddenly they slid out into the center of the frozen pond. It wasn't violent like the skeletal demon that had attacked him, yet her ability to move him in the demon realm was even more worrying. Once they were alone, however, the frogs just distant specks, she went silent. Rick decided that whether or not she was on the level, he should just be direct. "I don't like demonic bonds, and I've never taken a real one. You're going to have to do better than a little flirtation to convince me."
"Believe me, I intend to."
Katenka turned to him, and he realized that she could do an icy gaze like none other.
"Let me begin with a show of good faith. Everything I did for your little friends was purely voluntary, without any strings attached. If you want to turn me down, you can leave with their contract."
"That..." Rick looked toward where they stood on the shore. "Did I make a mistake sending them here?"
They may not be the brightest demons in the realm, but don't be condescending. You didn't send them. You helped them come here. But yes, it was probably foolish on their part. Even with their pass, they could very easily have ended up dead, since they would be little missed. Their firm might have asked for compensation, but if you are wealthy enough, that is simply the fee to murder.
Katenka was speaking with brutal directness now, which he preferred. Yet he remembered Lilith and how she had shifted her approach to match his, so he remained cautious. Thank you for helping them, but I don't need to be convinced of your good nature. You're with one of the Siberian demonic corporations, right?
And you don't believe they are in the business of charity?
She raised a cool eyebrow, then smiled.
You're right, but I truly believe that an agreement would be in our mutual best interest. Not only do you need an advisor so you don't err when it comes to the demon realm, few humans compete at the highest level without demonic bonds. Those two spoke of you as invincible, but I think we both know how competitive the showdown can be.
Everyone tries to convince me that demonic bonds are normal, but going bankrupt and ruining your life seems pretty normal too, in my experience.
So skeptical. What can I possibly do to overcome this prejudice?
He hadn't expected such a direct question, but he realized that he actually had his answer. I need to understand how a real partnership would be in your self-interest. You want me to overdraw and pay you a lot of lucrum, otherwise you don't make a profit. I can't work with an organization that wants me to fail.
I won't deny that demonic firms make a great profit off many humans failing, but that doesn't mean we want you in particular to fail.
Katenka raised a finger to her lips thoughtfully.
I hope that you know that a demonic bond increases a person's strength, even if they don't draw heavily on it. But I wonder if you know how.
Honestly, I assumed that everyone was just drawing heavily all the time.
Perhaps for the low-quality bonds you've seen. But it's more complex than that, and perhaps it would be easiest to explain with an economic bond. When you pay for something with demonic lucrum, do you think that transaction is free? It's not, but the store is the one paying for the transaction fee, not you.
So you make money off every purchase? Rick had honestly never heard of that before, but he assumed that she wouldn't lie to his face about something so easily checked. How does that relate to combat?
The power I'd grant you is inherently draining, but not necessarily to you. With every contract with an enemy, you steal away a small percentage of their lucrum, or at least their energy. Some of that goes to me, some of it goes to you, but there's a net profit for both of us.
Paid by everyone else, then?
That's right. So you see, demonic firms really make profits in two ways. The lowest classes of bonds are purely exploitative, but those who can't be exploited receive a more prestigious type of bond.
Katenka gave him another one of those creepy smiles.
We want to offer you the latter. We don't anticipate you'll ever overdraw the bond, but we'll both still make a profit regardless.
What she said made sense, and it was cynical enough for him to believe it. Of course, that meant he would be draining everyone around him, even if only a little. But apparently this was happening all the time, probably even when other people fought against him, so this was only evening the playing field.
Not many humans in Siberia have quite your attitude, Katenka went on quietly. But I've seen it before. They've only encountered the worst of demonic bonds, and so they fear them all. People who have only seen them working well are on the other side and can't understand their reluctance. But if you're moving up in the world, this is something you should eventually accept.
And I should accept it via your contract, is that it? Katenka swept her arms to the side in a grandiose bow.
That is exactly what I am proposing. My firm is willing to offer you a moderately sized bond on normal terms, but I would strongly suggest something better. I don't know if you've seen it, but in Siberia they're quite fond of fusion. What I propose is less drastic than that, but there would be a link between us. I would be able to provide you with information and occasional other services.
If she had been intending to be flirtatious, that would have been the moment for it, but Rick saw nothing but seriousness in her expression. In fact, she seemed more serious than he expected. Though she hid it well, he thought that this mattered to her in some way. Perhaps she simply needed his bond to make her numbers for that quarter, or something else so cynical, but he thought there was something deeper to it.
You're a hard one to crack. What if I actually showed you the contract?
Katenka waved a hand, and a pale scroll emerged from the lake below them.
I assure you, this is legally binding. Please read it over and make your decision.
Thanks, I will. Rick found that he could touch the scroll, unlike most objects in the demon realm, so he opened it enough to read. After a while, he pushed into the air to drift on his back, a trick he'd learned back in Branton. It was more relaxing than constantly shifting near the edges of the ground he couldn't quite touch. Though not as straightforward as the contract with Buffgage and Yithsel, Rick was surprised to find that the contract wasn't terribly long. After all the negotiations, he could see through the basic legalese, and the important parts were written in plain language. It was a large bond, and despite everything, he was tempted by the immediate increase in power. Even more so, now that he understood how it could work to his advantage. Several things bugged him about it, though. The part about other services rendered was extremely vague. Several clauses about the consequences of overdrawing the bond seemed odd, actually more in his favor than he'd expected. Above all, the contract implied that she would actually be fused to him in some spiritual way, even in the human realm. "I'll admit the numbers seem good," Rick said eventually. "But I don't like some of these parts I don't understand."
"Which parts?" Katenka asked.
She had stopped paying attention to him, instead bending down and running her fingers over the ice. They left lines of frost, slowly forming some broader pattern in front of them. "This business about deferring overdrawing consequences? It seems like it's actually too much to my advantage, giving me so much time to pay without any
Oh, that part is a little gift to you. I understand that fighters sometimes need to use everything, and it's within my authority to give you a bit of an allowance. Nothing out of the ordinary."
She moved her fingers more rapidly, strangely anxious, yet it didn't seem like she was trying to deceive him. "What's this about you going along with me? You won't be in my head, will you? Or looking over my shoulder?"
"Don't worry, Rick. That will be entirely under your control. If you don't want me to see anything, I'll be blind. On the other hand, I'll be directly on call to offer power or advice at a moment's notice. It really is a good deal for both of us. Please, look at it carefully."
There was something slightly off about the way she was speaking, prompting Rick to look away from the contract. Her face was calm, yet the way she floated near her ice drawings was slightly stiff. Then he looked down at what she was drawing, and he froze as well. The lines of frost said, "Please." For just a moment, she met his gaze, and he saw something desperate there. The next moment, she tapped her foot against the ice, and a rush of cold wind blew away all of her work. Rick briefly closed his eyes against it, and when he looked again, she was the absolute picture of control, an untouchable ice demon. Was the glimpse of something else he'd seen below just a ploy? Part of Rick insisted that he should try to find out if she was in trouble, while another part told him that he was being an absolute idiot. There seemed to be no way to resolve that conflict, so he focused on the contract, which was written in unambiguous black and white. The facts were simple. He needed a demonic bond, and the terms on this one were good. Rick hoped he wasn't making a mistake, but he didn't think he'd be finding a better option. "All right." Rick took a deep breath and rolled up the scroll. "What needs to happen? Can I sign the contract here?"
"No, you'll need to sign one in the human realm."
Did he imagine a flicker of relief on Katenka's face?
"But since this is partially a fusion, we can conduct the first part of it here. In fact, we must. Let's return to your friends."
With a rush of wind, the two of them returned to the side of the lake. The brothers turned toward Rick, eagerly presenting him with a scroll of their own. It was green and vaguely sticky instead of made of pristine frozen parchment, but Rick was more willing to take it.
"Look at this,"
Buffgage said, coughing up mucus proudly.
"Our combat demonic bond could only provide you with 800 lucrum, but this one is worth 2,000 lucrum, and it will keep generating more. Plus, we can probably make it bigger if we get more economic contracts."
"I'll make this official as soon as I get back to the real world," Rick said, smiling down at the frogs. But his smile didn't last long, and he turned to Katenka. "What do we need to do for yours?"
Normally, this would be difficult.
She floated to hover slightly higher over the pond with a bit of a smirk.
But you've led a strange life so far. The first thing you need is a demon mass in your portfolio, but you still have some left. The second thing you need is above-average control of aura in our realm, but you have that too. That leaves only the third requirement, which is a bit more of a ceremony.
Rick swallowed, but he'd made his decision. Fine. Let's seal the deal here.
Then I need you to plunge your hand through the ice. I should warn you that it will hurt, but you should know pain from your training. It will only take a short time, with no permanent cost to you, and then it will be done.
He stepped out toward her, onto the ice. When she nodded down at the place where he was standing, Rick knelt lower and stared at it. The ice looked rather thick, and the glow seemed to be coming from beneath it. His suspicion was that the pool was in some way related to Katenka's power, so it made sense that he needed to do something with it.
Go on, Rick, you can do it!
Itzel cheered him on, but the others were silent. Rick started to make a movement, then aborted it and looked at Katenka's reaction. He didn't see any triumph or disappointment, only an increase in tension. It smoothed away a moment later. There was nothing else to do. Rick reared back and then plunged his arm through the ice. It froze him to the bone, drawing a grunt of pain, but it wasn't as bad as he'd expected. The next moment, he felt something surge into his arm, like ice water in his veins, yet somehow it wasn't painful. Light began to flow from the pond into him, and he pulled his hand back on instinct, but the link was already formed, and the light flowed through the air into his hand. He'd expected a demonic tattoo, but instead his right hand was covered in what looked like frost. It didn't feel cold at all, or different to the touch, yet... Nearby, he saw Katenka watching him. The first expression he saw was relief. Then she smiled, absolutely polite once again.
That will be my embodied presence, she explained, at least once you return to the human realm. It shouldn't inhibit you otherwise.
My actual hand, though. Rick tried to brush off the frost, but couldn't feel anything other than his own skin. That's creepy for a whole bunch of reasons. I don't want you just sitting in my right hand.
Would this be more to your taste?
Katenka closed her eyes, and the frost crept up his arm, leaving his hand entirely. It settled in a ring around his bicep, but with icy tendrils reaching down toward his forearm. That looked better to him. Plus, it was something he could hide even with his sleeves rolled up. Certainly better than having his hands permanently changed.
Yes, that will do.
Rick started to straighten up, only to have Buffgage and Yitzel run onto the ice to try to push against him.
Do you have to go?
Yitzel asked.
I know this was the important part, but I don't want you to leave.
Don't worry about us,
Buffgage said.
It will take a while to arrange, but we'll be able to pay our way back to Branton. In a few weeks, the contract should be ready for you in the human realm.
Rick swept his hand over both of their heads with a fond smile. Actually, I think I can do better than that. If I could summon you to Siberia, why can't we summon you back to Branton free of charge?
That is a good idea, but I don't know if anyone would believe it.
But what if it wasn't me? I have friends in Branton. Friends who might actually be interested in a small economic bond, now that I think about it. They could request your presence, then you could talk about contracts. Even if nothing worked out, you'd get back to Branton more easily. The brothers agreed to this idea with great enthusiasm and vomiting. Though Rick didn't have many relationships left in Branton, he thought that Adsela and Wemelot would actually be interested. Demonic bonds with such low interest rates and simple terms were rare, so surely they could be useful to the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. He'd write them an email explaining the situation, and hopefully it would work out well for everyone. Though Buffgage and Yisil wanted to talk longer, Rick was suddenly tired of the demon realm. It was partially exhaustion from maintaining his aura, partially the cold piercing through him, and partially just being sick of the bleak landscape. He wanted to go to his hotel and sleep. So they said their farewells, then Rick drifted back toward the pool he'd entered. He went alone. He'd expected Katenka to follow him, but she was acting strangely distant. His skepticism returned, but he told himself that nothing was permanent until he signed a contract in the human realm. If she'd infected him somehow, he could get H to help eradicate it. Jumping into the pool proved surprisingly easy, and he broke back out, standing on the roof of the hotel. H had gone back inside, of course, so Rick went back into the elevator and headed down. Just standing there, listening to the generic music, was deeply surreal after his experience in the demon realm. As he reached his floor, Rick realized that he was being an idiot and overlooking the obvious. He quickly rolled up his sleeve and confirmed it. The lines of frost were around his arm for real. They didn't look quite so luminous in the human realm, just like pale blue ink. Still, at least it wasn't a hideous tattoo, and it wouldn't be distracting. Rick still had his sleeve rolled up when he headed down the hall, but he ran into H before getting to his room. The older man examined him carefully, then let out an unreadable grunt.
That bond, how exactly did you land it?
I used the demonic connections I'd been building. Seeing his mentor surprised left Rick a little cocky, so he smirked.
Networking. Well, it's adequate. Better than you could have gotten just going to a conventional firm. I bet when it's formally signed and evaluated, it will be counted as worth 20,000 lucrum or more. Looks like it's a partial fusion, too. Not as exceptional as a real fusion, but it might help a bit. Make your defensive core stronger against ice, maybe.
Hearing the number actually stunned Rick more than the surreal experience in the demon realm. There had been a time when his entire lucrum generation rate had been less than 20,000. Even the largest demonic bonds that Henry had taken, ones with horrible consequences, had only been worth 12,000 lucrum. It wasn't a birthright core, but it was still an insane amount of power for him to earn in a single decision.
You're going to need to learn to use it, though.
H shook his head and began fishing for a cigarette.
The fact that you've avoided demonic bonds before now puts you at a disadvantage. Too much risk of overdrawing, or of ignoring it and getting no real benefit. We'll need to train with...
I'm sure we do, but not right now. Rick surprised himself by interrupting, and H seemed taken aback, but he pushed forward. Getting this contract was exhausting. To train productively, I need a good long sleep.
Huh.
H stared at him, then grunted his approval and turned away. Soon, Rick was alone in the hallway again. Now that he was back, he really was increasingly tired. He opened and then relocked his door, eagerly imagining what was to come. Some of Lisa's serum would come first, then he'd take a long, hot shower. After that, simple exercises to keep his mind in order, then a solid night of sleep. When he woke in the morning, he could feel more confident he'd made the right decisions.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
The voice made him flinch violently, only recognizing it as Katenka the next moment. She hovered just beside him, her body ghostly, but clearly making eye contact.
Rick groaned. I didn't expect you to manifest like this. You said I controlled that, right? Well, right now I want you to go away so I can sleep.
Ah, but you see, it's a bit more of a negotiation than I implied earlier.
Katenka gave him a warm smile and reached out, and he actually felt her fingers trail over his chest, strangely cool.
You knew that you were getting more out of this contract than a little lucrum, right? It's time to seal the deal.
No, I don't want...
He was interrupted when her hand pressed more firmly against his chest. She couldn't actually move him, but he instinctively retreated from her touch, his legs bumping back against the bed.
Be honest with yourself, Rick. We need a little privacy right now, don't we?
She gave him a lascivious smile, but when her eyes met his, they were colder than ice.
I insist.
Chapter 27. Post-contract negotiations.
You wouldn't want the government spying on our fun, would you?
Katenka swayed toward him, eyes still as hard as before.
You see, there's just one little thing.
Her fingers walked down his chest toward his pants, but they stopped on his pocket where his official Siberian ID badge lay. Swallowing the lump in his throat, Rick forced himself to think clearly. She obviously had something in mind, and presumably not what she pretended. Since he trusted the government even less than he trusted the demon living in his arm, Rick pulled out the badge. Katenka jerked her head to the side, toward the simple table in his room. When Rick set down the badge, she floated around behind him, her ghostly body brushing against his back. But her hands reached out to trace a pattern around the badge. A sort of containment field, he thought. Rick generated a sphere of aura around the badge, then glanced back at her.
Oh, thank fuck.
Everything about Katenka's demeanor changed, all the tension draining out of her, and she floated back from him. She didn't look seductive. She looked exhausted.
Keep that barrier up, whatever you do. Tell me if it's going to falter.
I'm tired, but maintaining something this small is easy. Rick gestured toward the sphere of aura. That's really enough to hide from the government.
It's enough to keep them from listening to us.
She swept toward him, but this time she just grabbed his shoulders as if trying to shake him.
You have to get me out of this hellhole.
That is not what I expected. Still tired, despite the revelations, Rick dropped down to sit on his bed. Katenka let go and floated some distance away. Are you going to be fully honest with me now? Because I still haven't signed that contract. She rolled her eyes.
You don't need any more leverage over me, Rick. You have plenty. Listen, basically everything I said to you was true. The only part I lied about was how much I'm riding along with you. Unless you betray me now, I can leave when you do. I'd prefer that you maintained the contract, but if you insist, there are ways to sever it once we're out.
What exactly is this hellhole you mentioned? Wherever you were trapped in the burning snow? Or do you mean your demonic firm?
No, I mean this entire nation, in both realms.
Katenka floated on her back in the air, relaxing more the further the conversation went on.
You honestly have no idea what it's like. This is an authoritarian nightmare even for humans, and for demons it's even worse. I'm in a stronger position than most, but everything I've done has been to try to get the hell out.
And so you targeted me. Despite himself, Rick was relaxing as well, trusting this version of Katenka much more than those he had seen before. He leaned back against the headboard and regarded her curiously. How much of this was really coincidence?
Some? Most? That's hard to say. I have a strong position with my firm, but unfortunately they wanted me to grant normal bonds to the children of the elite here. The other obvious path is a fusion, but doing that with a human from Siberia or anywhere in the greater territories would be pointless. I knew that a foreigner from the showdown would be my best bet.
And so you stumbled on me?
Yes, but you weren't the first.
Katenka smiled down at him, her expression much more casual, but with a bit of that predatory look.
Your demon friends spoke highly of you, which got my attention, so I did a little research. I might know a little bit more about you than you'd want, but I assure you, it's in my best interests to serve your best interests.
Rick considered that for a while, part of him wanting to believe her, but another part of him still a bit skeptical. And is that your only goal? Escape Siberia?
I've had ideas for what happens after, but they've been theoretical. If you work with me, that could actually be interesting. If you cut me loose, I'll need to find a way into a foreign firm. Long term, I might want to bring a few friends out of Siberia as well, but their positions are so much weaker than mine, it simply isn't possible now. Basically, I just want to live in a proper capitalist society.
It's not as great as it sounds, trust me.
No, trust me.
Katenka drew herself up, ice swirling around her, and though it had no effect in the human realm, it was still a striking sight.
We talk about Siberia as if survival of the fittest produces the greatest warriors in either realm. Maybe it does, but it also produces villages filled with disease-ridden, illiterate peasants. On our side, the lesser demons are used as little more than fodder. It's a horrible system that preys on the weak to enrich the few.
Rick could only shake his head. Then I have some bad news for you about capitalism.
What? Are you saying you'd rather live under a fascist government?
She folded her arms and regarded him sternly.
I'm not naive, Rick. I know your system is harsh, but it's also produced so much good in the world.
That might be true, but I've spent most of my life feeling that system kick me directly in the face.
I can see that we're going to disagree about a few things. But if you take me out of this place, I don't care about your political beliefs. I'll give you as much power as I can to make that happen, though we'll need to be careful until the Shodan leaves Siberia. Or, more accurately, until we're away from the burning snow long enough for any lingering connections to fade.
Since things had turned out better than expected, Rick regarded her with a new set of questions. If we're being all direct with each other, maybe this would be a good time to be honest about all the ambiguous contract stuff. You lied about me being able to shut you up, apparently. The ice demon winced at that.
Yes, I did, mainly because I was trying to obfuscate my plan. This is going to have to be an agreement with some trust between us. What I can promise you is that I won't be voyeuristically looking over your shoulder at all times. The exact mechanics are difficult to explain, but you can think of me as between demon and human realms, linked by your mind.
Then, if other people were looking in...
You'd look like a crazy person talking to yourself. No one else can hear me, unless you make an investment that allows me to manifest physically. But that would be a more drastic measure, not something we need to get into.
No, let's do that. Rick laced his fingers over his stomach and regarded her. What exactly can you do for me, other than loaning Lucrum?
For a start, you should be mostly immune to demonic manipulation now. I can advise you of anything I notice, and the effects themselves should slip off you. What I said about draining from your opponents is true, and I happen to be unusually good at it. That probably won't ever decide a battle for you, but it should improve your stamina. That's all you get for free.
But if I invest Lucrum into you...
Then it depends on how much you're willing to spend,
Katenka continued with a casual shrug.
With my help, you might be able to create some kind of ice spike, but I wouldn't rely on it. With just a little Lucrum, I can make you immune to cold. Maybe to drowning, though I wouldn't test that recklessly. If you're willing to throw in a lot, you could temporarily manifest me in the human world like demon leaders do, but that would be expensive and it would probably exhaust me for days.
Good to know. It had all been a huge risk based on incomplete information, but Rick was finally starting to believe he'd made the right decision. He'd feared demonic bonds for years, but it looked like he could get along with Katenka. I think we can work together. Help me compete in the showdown, and I'll definitely make sure you get wherever you want to go. Relief was visible on her face as she took a deep breath. Then the expression disappeared into a mask. But that mask soon relaxed into a smile.
I told you that you weren't the first, Rick. A human who stumbles into the demon realm and gives out his blood to demons like Buffed Cage and Yisil? That's unusual. I thought that you might be my ticket out of the burning snow, but I don't mind working with you.
And I don't regret making the contract with you, even if you're a horrible demonic temptress. Her chuckle was still more like ice-breaking than a human sound, but it felt authentic.
I do hope this will be fun. There are so many somber warriors here who care about nothing but bloodlust. It grows rather dull.
Actually, Rick sat back up, looking at her curiously. You know, I've never really thought about demons having relationships. That can happen, right?
Where do you think baby demons come from?
Katenka smiled, but it was a weary expression.
What you may not realize was that forming the contract was actually more exhausting for me than it was for you. Especially because I've been nervous that you would decide to turn me in the entire time. I will be going dormant, which means you won't be able to contact me even if you need to.
So it's a good time to take a shower without you being a problem.
I'll take pictures and use them as blackmail in case you ever turn against me.
The demon began to fade, but then resolved a little more and looked back at him.
Thank you for this, Rick. I'll make sure it isn't charity.
He waved off her thanks, but he wasn't sure if she saw, since she was already fading away. When he concentrated more carefully, he thought that he could actually feel the difference in his portfolio. Even if it wasn't official yet, he had access to a significant quantity of power via the demonic bond. Everything else she had promised was absent, and her presence itself lay still. Rick glanced at the clock, groaned, and then shuffled to take a shower. That had not been the day he expected. But he didn't have any room to complain. Chapter 28. Demonic Fusion. After his experiences in the demon realm, Rick was more than ready to spend several days inside, focused on training. Normally, he regretted not getting to see more of the country, but everything he'd seen of Siberia had been bleak so far. From chatter among other contestants, he gathered that some of the larger cities and areas such as the former Russia could be enjoyable, but this year they were stationed further north. Rick signed the Demonic Bond's formal contract after confirming that it was as discussed, but then ignored it for several days. Katinka said that she needed to rest and adjust to her new environment in the human realm, and H either understood or chose not to focus on it. So instead, they focused on fully establishing the Triune Golden Spheres. Rick was building up all three, but only the defensive sphere was fully gold, so H set him on a program to finish the others. Rick drank more formula tea every 8 hours, at concentrations that had him dizzy in a way that he rarely was. They were pushing the limit he could manage without addiction, but Rick was glad to see the golden spheres grow a little more each day. Before they were completed, H called for a break to give his body time to recover from the overtraining. Instead, they focused on the demonic bond, which proved to require more technique than Rick had imagined. It did add a little more weight to his lucrum a soul just by being there, and when he focused, he could sense the drain on others that Katinka had described. There was an art to it, however, and it ran against all his instincts. The technique itself was easy, actually too easy, but his mind resisted drawing on the demonic bond, both naturally and especially when he considered it. Unlike his personal lucors, he was always aware that every time he drew on it, he would need to repay the lucrum later. It ran deeply against how his gut felt fighting should be. H attacked him relentlessly, trying to drill those bad habits out of him. Rick actually reacted poorly to that, falling back on his own instincts. But the lectures that went along with it helped a little. H reminded him that he would be drinking Philosopher's Elixir afterwards and could just repay the bond then. If he was going to exert himself either way, it made more sense to use the demonic bond efficiently. Bit by bit, Rick managed to adjust to using it to strengthen everything else he did. Every day's training session came in two waves, first with H and then a second with Katinka. After she'd adjusted, she was happy to give her own suggestions about use of demonic bonds. Apparently, she had been bonded to a number of warriors, so she had significant experience from the other side. She confirmed that he was particularly bad at it, but didn't seem troubled. Though Rick looked forward to the ultimate defense ring after a couple weeks, H decided to change their fundamental strategy. The competition in Siberia was likely to be brutal, and fighting at the top level before he had mastery of the Triune Golden Spheres risked damage. So instead, Rick was enrolled in many lesser defensive events, which gained him no glory, but plenty of experience. As expected, Rick found the new techniques brutal. Katinka made him nearly immune to any attacks based on cold, but he was still stabbed by more than a few ice shards, as well as pummeled by all kinds of strange aura. Yet with each event, Rick found his defenses adapting a little faster. His own defensive core, the second one in the Triune Golden Spheres, and the demonic bond all reinforced one another, giving the dark blood kettle plenty of space to grow. In his recovery time, Rick checked the Showdown website to read up on the event he'd be participating in later. It was essentially an endurance melee, the fighters trapped within a sphere of aura small enough that they ended up beating the hell out of each other. He realized that it would be a brutal test not only of his defensive core, but of his new senses as well. While researching, Rick found himself wandering into other topics and finding there were some uniquely Siberian events. One involved candidates having their legs locked in place, then they essentially punched each other in the face until one of them fell unconscious or gave up. It sounded ridiculous, and yet he kind of wanted to try it. After watching a few videos of the event online, he changed his mind. Even the lower-ranked fighters could strike with absolutely brutal force, giving up defense for raw offense. The winners often had concussions and long-term brain damage, which was a higher price than he was willing to pay. Then anyone should have had to pay, though he began to realize that Siberia made people desperate. As they grew used to each other, Katinka would comment more frequently, swirling into being beside him to add her thoughts. She never distracted him while he was fighting or doing something important, and she had quite politely avoided speaking to him while he was showering or sleeping. The reduced privacy should have bothered him, yet he found himself growing accustomed to her presence.
"We should go out," Katenka said one evening.
Rick had just been lying back on the bed, recovering from his training and trying to figure out what to do with a time he couldn't train. Having Melissa in Europe really cut into his options. He lifted his head up enough to look at her. "Why would you want to walk around this, and I quote, hellhole?"
"You might be happy staying in hotels all the time, but I'm used to being outside."
Katenka floated overhead and smoothed back a lock of her hair, which he only then realized didn't obey gravity.
"It's snowing, but you don't have to worry about that thanks to me. Come on, you'll enjoy getting some fresh air."
Though he considered whether or not this could be some kind of long game to kidnap him, by the time Rick pulled on his shoes, he decided that was just paranoia. Katenka had been nothing but helpful so far, and everything she'd said about his leverage over her seemed to be true. Besides, he'd been mentally complaining about being stuck inside, so he'd be a hypocrite if he didn't take the opportunity. The guards outside the hotel observed his badge very sternly, but they let him through. As Katenka had said, it was indeed snowing, heavy white flakes slowly blanketing the dark streets. Rick automatically put his hands into his jacket pockets, though as promised, he wasn't cold.
"See? Isn't this nice?"
Katenka floated beside him, floating in a way that reminded him of how he drifted in the demon realm.
"I find your white snow so beautifully exotic, though I understand that it's normal here."
"Yeah, it was good to get outside." Rick glanced over and regarded her thoughtfully. "You know, I just assumed that your white motif was because of snow. I mean, hair, skin, eyes, clothes."
"You don't need to convince me about my own coloring, Rick."
"But you get what I mean. I assumed that it was all white because you were a snow demon or whatever. If your snow is black, that doesn't actually make sense unless it's just a cover you put on to match human expectations."
"It's actually more complicated than that."
Katenka tapped a finger on her lips, as if considering how much she wanted to say, and he noticed that her fingernails were pearly white, too. Eventually, she smiled.
"Perhaps the place to start is with stories. The thing is, when humans write stories about demons, they don't think of us as people, just symbols. And symbols have a lot of meaning, but they don't have very much life, if you understand me."
"I think I do."
"But the demon realm has been around as long as the human realm. Some argue longer, so I've always been tempted to believe they are inseparable. There have always been people going across the divide in both directions. We influenced your cultures and myths, but you also influenced ours."
"If it goes both ways, do you tell human stories? Humans coming in the night to kill naughty little demons?" Katenka chuckled.
"It's not really the same, as young demons are not what you'd consider children. But yes, we do have stories. Perhaps I'll tell you some, at some point."
"And you're a Rusalka?" Rick glanced over at her again, trying to fit her appearance to those he had seen. "I did a little research, but I wasn't sure if it was really relevant to you."
"Only a little, because I was born in the far, far north. I'm more ice than water. They're the same chemically, of course, but our world doesn't operate quite like yours. Those transitions tend to be larger barriers than they are here."
"So if I was dying of thirst in a desert, you couldn't make water?"
"I could make ice. That would melt instantly, so does it matter?"
"Just asking. If we're going to work together, we might as well understand those limits." He thought that Katenka might have smiled at that, but her gaze shifted away from him, and she spoke in a quiet voice.
"In any case, while it isn't inaccurate to call me a Rusalka, don't think of it as a species label. It's more like calling someone a painter. That can be more or less accurate, but it doesn't reflect something deep in their DNA. I don't really care if someone uses the word, but if we're being all friendly, I'd prefer you just call me Katenka."
Though he considered asking her whether demons actually had DNA, Rick found himself utterly distracted. The streets had been rather mundane up to that point, but as he turned a corner, he saw something looming overhead. A statue towered over all the nearby buildings, blocked from the hotel only by a skyscraper between them. As Rick got closer, the sense of scale just became more and more difficult to grasp. He'd seen large statues before, but none that looked so heavy. It was built from black stone, and something about the presence of it gave him the sense that it was solid rock all the way through. Despite all the snow swirling around them, none had gathered on the statue. The presence had so caught his attention that he didn't manage to look at the features more carefully until he drew nearer. It portrayed a powerfully built man wearing a fur cloak, but his face looked more like a monster's, with unnaturally large jaws. Though his expression was probably meant to look strong, Rick thought it looked cruel. "That's our Chernobog, isn't it?" He couldn't read the placard, but it looked close enough to the drawings he'd seen. Katenka shifted beside him and nodded.
"The Peerless of Siberia, one of the most powerful people in either realm. When it comes to raw strengths, anyway."
I'd always thought the drawings of his head were symbolic, or just weirdly drawn, but this statue looks photorealistic. Does he actually look like that?
"I don't know, Rick. I'll snip a picture the next time I'm having tea with him."
He just rolled his eyes. "I just mean, that's not really human. Technically, it's possible that he completely transformed himself, I suppose, but I was wondering if he'd fused with a demon. Surely that much is public knowledge."
"Oh, yes, it's a fusion. The only debate is over whether he's a human who took on a demon, or a demon who took control of a human. It's been so long, I doubt that it really matters now. Whoever he was, he's just Tsar Chernobog now."
After admiring the statue a while longer, Rick turned away and headed down a different street. There was a roundabout surrounding the statue, but he only saw a couple cars while he was there. From what he'd seen, the elite of Siberia liked to travel under their own power, and this city largely catered to them. It still surprised him, making him think back to the arguments about economics. They walked on from the grand statue, and Rick found his gaze attracted by something much more mundane, a boxy building that stood beside a convenience store. The front was mostly glass, allowing him to see a series of contraptions inside that he thought were exercise machines for a moment, but another part of his mind insisted were something much worse. "What's that?" Rick walked closer, examining the machines. There seemed to be differences, especially in the helmet that people wore to use them, but something about it seemed so familiar.
"The sign says Lucrem up. I haven't actually seen one from this side before."
Katenka floated next to the window, frowning inside.
"They're a method of loaning humans Lucrem against their future training, essentially. It provides instant Lucrem, but hampers future growth. Most of the core Siberian sects forbid the use of them, so they're mostly used by the poorest humans. I think it's stolen from American technology. Maybe you've heard of it."
"Ah, you could say that." He hadn't wanted to believe it, but this was the local equivalent of the advanced Lucrem stations made by McGuire Incorporated. "It was a strange coincidence, but I was actually involved with one of the prototypes for this. Not as a tester, just as an accident."
"Good. I was hoping you weren't actually interested because this path is a dead end."
"Definitely not. I was just surprised to see it here." Rick turned aside and headed back to the bleak streets, but his mind remained stuck on the store behind him. "You said that most of them are used by the poorest humans."
"That's right. Those who can't get a decent demonic bond. At least, that's what most demons say. I shouldn't pretend to be an expert on human behavior. They should all know that these places are horrible, practically digging their own graves, but they keep using them."
"And I shouldn't pretend to be an expert on Siberia. But I've been poor, and I know it's always the little things. Someone has to go to the emergency room. Your car breaks, and you'll lose your job without it. It's the sort of thing you could handle if you knew it was coming, but you never know what's coming. What gets me, now that I'm dealing with so much Lucrem, is how tiny a lot of the expenses are. Like, there was a time in my life when 50 Lucrem was a big deal."
"It's the same for a lot of demons. They just tend to get eaten around here."
"That's... Rick paused, looking over at her thoughtfully. He realized that he'd have to control that tendency in public, but there was basically nobody else on the street anyway. "Can small demons grant demonic bonds? I know Buffgage and Yithzel barely managed, but I don't know how much of that is skill or power or just administration."
"Some of everything."
She met his gaze with a cool one, but kept speaking.
"In theory, any demon could grant a bond, but if it was too small, then it wouldn't be worth the costs involved in setting it up. Just what are you thinking, Rick?
I don't know. I just wish there was a way that both sides could help each other. When poor humans need just a little bit of money, they could get a small bond from poor demons. Wouldn't that work? Like, as a business? I mean, it would depend on local laws and licenses and all that.
If it was profitable, wouldn't the demonic firms already be doing it?
But that's just it. They need to be profitable. Their goal is to be as profitable as possible. Rick knew he was probably rambling about things way over his head, but he still found himself smiling. But from the point of view of combat, profits are inefficiencies. What if you could set up a system that just needed to sustain itself? Couldn't you undercut the big firms with cheaper bonds? At least Katenka didn't call him an idiot, instead considering his idea quietly as they proceeded. When she spoke, her tone was odd.
In many places, laws in the demon realm would prevent you. But in theory, it could work, at least in terms of the bond. I'm fairly sure it would fail as a business, though.
Why? Couldn't you run the numbers and make sure that it worked out?
For one bond, yes. But how often do people fail to pay back their debts? Your little operation would probably be taking on high-risk bonds, even considering how small they are, and it would all eventually collapse on you.
Rick sighed and nodded. Yeah, you're probably right. If it worked, somebody would have thought of it already.
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
Katenka gave him a surprisingly warm smile for an ice demon.
Your one little bond made a big difference for those two frogs. I would have been glad to find a reliable poor human when I was younger. It's possible that it's never been done, not because it wouldn't work, but because it wouldn't be profitable enough.
Though the idea was still wriggling in his mind, he knew he was no expert and couldn't figure it out himself. Instead, he focused on what she'd implied about herself. So, when you were a young demon, I'm guessing you weren't a frog, but what were you? A snowflake?
Most demons become more humanoid as they grow stronger. Those two frogs are actually close to the tipping point. They asked me a lot of questions about what kinds of humans are most attractive. I think they are both interested in you.
Wait, what? Now you're fucking with me. Rick grinned, and Katenka grinned back before continuing.
To be honest, I struggle to remember that part of my life. Most demons do begin as something simple and grow more complex, but becoming humanoid isn't inevitable, just common because that usually makes it easier to work with humans. The brothers will likely just become bigger frogs.
But your history, whatever you can remember of it, I'd honestly like to know.
And I'd like to tell you sometime, but I already covered it back in our hotel room.
Her eyes were like sharp points of ice, and he nodded to indicate that he understood she couldn't discuss it here. The intensity faded, and she hovered closer to him.
But I'd be interested in your history as well. The brothers talked about how you ended up in the demon realm by accident, but you were also involved in a secret Lucor prototype. You've had a more interesting life than I thought.
Well, Rick shrugged and began heading back to the hotel. I guess that's true, but it involves a lot more getting punched in the face than you might think.